Oh, good morning.
Thanks for listening again.
It might not be morning.
Could be any time.
Yeah.
Might not even be Wednesday.
Good afternoon. Yeah, it's probably not Wednesday for everybody.
Greetings.
And salutations from Whole Nine Yards.
Yeah, that's us.
We're back with idioms.
Etymology.
Phrase and word origins.
Look at us go.
So, today we're doing some clothing-oriented ones.
Yes.
Clothing. Yeah. And I'm going to go ahead and say, Ray, why don't you start us off? What do you have?
The first one that I researched for this week was dressed to the nines. Dressed to the nines.
Yeah, I'm hearing
you. Okay, I just wanted to make sure
I was searching
clear.
My brain to say, because I know the next thing you're going to ask me is, Jay, when I say dressed to the nines,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, I was going to. Now it feels forced.
Yeah, but it's okay.
All right.
I sort of let it into it.
Jay, when I say dressed to the nines, what do you think?
See, you're dressed up. You're just like really gussied up.
Yeah, it's gussied. Perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Perfect.
You have donned the full Monty.
You've got the gussy. You know what is interesting, my friend, and I will thank you for bringing that up because I'm going to bring it up.
Yeah.
So dressed to the nines is an English idiom meaning to perfection / to the highest degree. So the nines, like you said, nines.
Yeah.
Dressed to the nines.
Because
whole
it's always
nine yards.
A scale of 1 to 10. So why nine is like you missed something. You got a stain on your cuff. What's up?
What is with the nines in the clothes, right?
Yeah.
We can't get away.
No.
Does it relate to whole nine yards? No.
No.
It doesn't. It
scared me for a second.
I know. I wanted to leave it longer, but there's purported clothing origins here. So that it wasn't so far off. But I like a later one that I'm going to dive into. But let's go. We'll start here. The purported clothing origin suggests that this phrase is from an old English saying, favorite, dressed to the eyes is what it is. But because it's old English, it was written dressed to then Ein is how it's spelled, then space E-Y-N-E, two words. So then Ein could have morphed into the nine, sure.
What does dressed to the eyes even mean?
Yeah, wow. Why didn't I write that down? I think it means like dressed fancily still. Like it does mean the fancy dress. That does ring a bell in my mind.
I mean, dressed for the eyes. I know. I'm going to give you dressed for the eyes. I can make that jump. Dressed to the eyes.
Dressed
anyway, sorry.
No, you're fine. Yeah. Please. This is...
No,
we're
yeah.
happy. I'm happy to have the... yeah. So, then Ein could have morphed itself or could have been morphed into the nine as it's difficult to distinguish the phrase of saying them right now. As one might happen, you know, as we go, we have the telephone games, we've got history, we've got all kinds of spoken languages.
Sure.
Another possible origin is this phrase could be a specific application of a Scottish phrase, to the nine, which I found earliest written evidence to appear in the 1800s, so much later than the Old English thine, then ein.
Scottish to the nine applicational use was
to mean perfection.
Oh.
In this poetry of Robert Burns, a poem on pastoral poetry, thou paints auld night. Well, man, auld. It's auld, right? Auld lang syne. Auld.
I'll accept either.
All right. Thou paints auld nature to the nines in thy sweet Caledonian lines. And Robert Burns is using this to mean perfection. You've painted this nature perfectly. Perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm liking this idea, but for me it has to start at zero, though. It can't start at one, because why no 10? The 10, you know, is bothering me that the nine is the top, right? There's no Bo Derek here.
No, this is why, this is where I got my fun time trivial knowledge that I seek in everyday life. Was in why is 9 the best? Why do we always come back to 9?
Right.
You know, cloud 9, we have a reason for that. That's not the best. It's just a type of cloud. But what about the 9s and why do we come back to this? And this is I found this in research, but this one feels like I like this one the best personally. throughout like the history of our species, we've used this number 9 to be significant across like our culture, essentially. There's the 9 worthies of the Middle Ages, who represented the clearest in their minds, acts of chivalry, or the most chivalrous, people of the time, of the ages, not specifically of Old English, but over time. We have Sanskrit Navagraha. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. But that is 9 celestial bodies of the universe, which aren't the planets, because we didn't discover planets back at that point, but just more ideas. I mean, some of the planets, yes, but other things like lunar cycles and things like that. We have the Mayan underworld has 9 levels.
Mm.
There are 9 lords of the night from ancient Aztec cultures. The 9 muses of ancient Greek mythology, you know, representing art, science, and literature, things like that. So I think it's inherent in our like mythology or our lore, I guess, as a species, that this number 9 means the best, or you know what I mean? It's very significant to how we kind of make sense of the world around us, I guess, at the time.
I wonder, I was waiting for you to get to some synesthesian sort of blue tones or something with it. I don't know 9, how it correlates that. But 9.
Have some synesthetes.
But there's a lot there.
There's an English Anglican cleric in the 1600s, John Rollet. Little passage he wrote. The learned tribe whose works the world do bless, finish those works in some recess. Both the philosopher and divine, and poets most who still make their address in private to the 9. And the 9 is capitalized, the word 9. In this, he's, again, purportedly saying, like, people are making these addresses to these muses, to these characters, to these ideals of chivalry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. That one feels really satisfying to me because it has so much lore tied to it. But the 9 could have been misheard from the 9 from Middle English.
I don't like that one, that could, misheard thing.
Same. It's certainly
probably
the most plausible one.
Yeah, we've had those plenty.
And then the Scottish to the 9s also meant perfection. But that's using the phrase in the phrase. So like you can't define it with the self.
Can't do it.
So I don't know, the larger philosophical answer is the one that I like to think is the right one. So I think we've got this thing with 9s in our lore and we love it. And that's why 9 can represent perfection through the muses, through the lords of order. What do they call it? The worthies.
I'm a fan.
Yeah, that's Dressed to the 9s.
And if a 6 was 9, you got John Lennon's all hung up with the 9.
It means something to us.
Something.
So what's your clothing one to butt up that one? Button up that one. Oh, button up. Damn it, that would have been a great pun.
Yeah, maybe next time.
Yeah, next time.
So I have, put a sock in it.
Okay, all right.
So this one, you know, it's one of those ones that, let me just get into it.
Yeah, all right.
I'll tell you.
Okay, tell me.
Well, see, I don't know why. I guess, are people over time, And still to this day, sometimes sometimes I'm taken by how proper or polite people are, or how easily offended by simple slangs and things people are. So I'm always gratified by it, because it means, okay, there's still a bar somewhere. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm never expecting it. So
yeah, it'll sneak up on you. I hear you. Yeah.
So this one is kind of falls into that category, in that put a sock in it. I mean, for crying out loud. Okay. So let me. They will. If you dig into this, most of the references and books will say, well, you know, there was a gramophone, and it was loud and really didn't have a volume on it. You just put the needle on the record, mm-hmm. and it blasted out of that horn.
Yeah.
And if the record, you know, was shrill,
mm-hmm.
you'd stuff a sock in the gramophone.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But I digress. The earliest example I could find in print for this was from 1919, and it was in a number of different periodicals, because, you know, it's a syndicated columns, and then so somebody will find one in one newspaper and another, but it's all the same month or year all the time. So where, you know, they defined it in 1919, the expression "put a sock in it," meaning leaving off talking, singing, or shouting. Leave off.
Leave.
I know.
Okay. Yeah.
Leave off. But most other things, like I say, go back to the gramophone. But
yeah,
there's a novel, and it's set in 1916, okay?
Okay.
And this is World War One stuff. So one corporal is yelling with a soldier. I'll just go read the dialogue.
Okay.
"I'm not miserable, Corporal," said little Martlow. "We're not dead yet, only I'm not fighting for any bleepin' Belgians, see? One of them buggers wanted to charge me 5 francs for a loaf of bread. Well," says the corporal, "put a sock in it. We've had enough bloody talk now." So, I mean, put a sock in it.
Yeah.
Traces mostly to military stuff, and how it comes up in both American and Australian sort of vernacular not long after World War One is from World War One. So it somehow came out of World War One soldiers snoring in barracks, or slang like this, meaning shut up, basically.
Yeah.
They concocted it, and then after the war brought it home with them, and then we began to see it. And maybe it did then with the gramophone, someone used it, but it really feels like it started out as a crude, please be quiet, or not so much please, just be quiet, right?
There's not really a please in there.
No, yeah. See, that was me with a polite bar.
Yeah, so polite.
So put a sock in it is pretty simple. Huh. Maybe, I mean, I guess it's just because it's hard for me to, like I started out, to grasp that level of politeness somehow. Maybe it did start with the gramophone, because the gramophone is still a relatively old crank up device, pre-elect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
References to it in print are military and literature, you know, military literature, and suggest it was please be quiet, and that's put a sock in it.
The gramophone one rang out to me, because I would, as a kid, I'd put like a dish towel in my sax bell when I practiced. Because it was, you know, I was really bad, as you are when you start anything, and then you're loud, so I'm sure I was trying to be polite to the people in my house with my bar of politeness.
Man, that politeness keeps coming back to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one, yeah, I have experience with putting a sock in a brass bell, or a dish towel, I guess. I also set them on fire. But that's different.
That is another story altogether. And maybe we'll hear about that story from Rebecca.
I hope she doesn't know it.
But let's find out.
Let's find out together.
Allswell believes in the power of a good night's sleep for all. Their products feature innovative technology and unbelievable comfort and support without deflating your wallet. Combining the best of both worlds, the Allswell features hybrid mattress technology with memory foam and individually wrapped coils. For a winning blend of comfort and support, follow the link in the show notes for financing as low as 0%, a 100-night risk-free trial, free shipping and returns, and a 10-year limited warranty. Designed to make good sleep accessible to all. Real luxury, unreal prices. AllswellHome.com. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's BigScienceMusic.com.
So we did that.
Yeah. Did you hear about the fires I used to start? Probably not.
Yeah. Oh, I skipped over it.
Oh, nice. Good. Smart.
No, you shouldn't, because they're great sponsors.
No, don't.
I've just heard them a lot.
Yeah. No, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you have to start us off on the second half?
Drop of a hat.
All right.
Yeah. Do you know a show called The Simpsons?
Yes, I have heard of this show.
Do you know the episode where Marge gets a Canyon Arrow?
Yes, it has that famous commercial song.
It has the whole song, the Canyon Arrow song.
Yeah! That one.
It's 8 lanes wide and seats 35.
Right.
And then they sing.
No, yeah, they do.
At the end, Marge saves the day after her bout with road rage and all the funness by flipping her Canyon Arrow and starting a fire and saving her husband through this act. She says, "I was watching Dateline, and Stone Phillips said SUVs always roll over when you turn sharply, and the gas tanks explode at the drop of a hat." So what do you think Marge is using the idiom in this sense to mean? Drop of a hat.
"The commander said, 'Don't worry, I don't have the authority to kill you today.' Which was positive for that day anyway."
In 1993, Chris Moon was captured by the Khmer Rouge while clearing landmines in Cambodia. With survival probability low, Chris was brought in front of the boss.
"He was just given a local nickname, Mr. Clever."
Hi, I'm Steve Windus, host of the Batting the Breeze podcast. I'd love you to check out how Chris survived, along with some other great human stories, at battingthebreeze.com. Hopefully see you there.
I would think she meant, no matter the smallest thing, the quickest thing.
Yes, at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
At once, in a heartbeat, maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
I thought so.
Yeah.
I mean, who's dropping hats?
Well, that's the thing. It's like lots of folk, but then it's like, but it happened different times, and then why are they saying it's this? But it could be from then. You know, it's one of those fun ones. So a long time ago, some folks would settle up their differences on the dueling court, dueling rink.
Sure.
What a dueling field. What do you call them? Just a.
I don't know. This is the walk 10 paces, turn around and shoot.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, it was just out in the street, as far as I knew. It wasn't like a fencing match or anything.
So on the dueling street, some say to signal to all parties that the, you know, fight/duel, I'm going to expand this beyond dueling to fighting or racing even. Someone would drop/swing a hat or handkerchief. So that would signify the start of the race or the duel or the fight, someone else dropping a hat or swinging a hat or something like that.
All right.
And like speculatory evidence says this is American Old West, but we're dueling before the Old West, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So like the idiomatic usage crops up like in the 1800s already as an idiom, not even like a, you know, phrase that they're just, they know what it is by then. I have a register of debates in Congress from October 1837. Quote, they could agree in the twinkling of an eye, at the drop of a hat, at the crook of a finger, to usurp the sovereign power. They cannot agree in 4 months to relinquish it. So, 1837, they're using the idiom drop of a hat already. I know. I did see this kind of thing. It seems to pop up a lot in politics of these early times. And I saw evidence or saw some conjecture that it really did relate to our Congress not being able to argue their differences of opinion. They went out into the street and had duels and people dropped the hats. I mean, there's a lot of political usage in here, so I'm not sure if that's the first one, but it's like, oh, that's interesting. Huh. 1852, the Milwaukee Daily Sentinel. I found many old soldiers who called themselves Democrats and were ready to fight at the drop of a hat with any man who ought to say against General Scott.
Just who ought to say against
ought to
him?
Say. He ought to say against, yeah.
Yeah.
Who had ought to say. Sorry. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah.
Because sometimes
so much.
Some of those, you know, the way they use language.
Yeah.
It's like you're watching Shakespeare. You got to kind of like hold on. Like I can't miss anything.
Because
it's,
yeah. You got to hear every single thing. Yeah. Thank you for correcting.
No, just you.
That quote is from Worldwide Words. Worldwide Words.
It's hard. Yeah.
Wow,
R's and
that
W's.
Is, wow. So it seems like this idiom relates to the literal dropping of a hat or swinging of a hat to start a contest or race or fight. Just some trivia.
I like trivia sometimes.
It's a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, like olden times as well. We still do with traveling carnivals, fairgrounds. But they had strongman competitions in these old-timey carnivals and things.
Sure.
Often boxing matches and things like that.
Oh.
And apparently the public were invited to come up and fight the professionals. Quotes. I'm quoting the professionals. And apparently every single man who lived at these times in history wore a hat. So... for them to say like, hey, I want to fight the professional next, they would literally throw their hat into the ring and then they would easily be identified as the
person hatless, missing the hat.
Hatless person, right?
Yeah.
As they made their way to the ring. So yeah, that's just the side one, and we can strike off the throw your hat into the ring probably.
Shucks.
Yeah, so drop of a hat. Kind of a literal, again, someone swinging, dropping a hat to start a contest. Fight, duel, flip over an SUV to save your husband from rhinoceri. It's rhinoceroses, everybody. ESS is always the appropriate pluralization of every word.
Who knew?
People.
People who knew people. So, can't
yeah.
say that.
So, drop of the hat.
Yeah.
Drop of a hat.
Well, I have one that is also going to slightly jump off of yours, but I won't tell you exactly how, but I'll tell you how pretty quickly.
I'll buckle in.
So I have a simple one here to bring this episode home.
Okay.
This is a ride one's coattails. I know, right?
Okay.
So Ray.
Yes.
So if I say, yeah, that guy got promoted, but he kind of rode Jim's coattails.
Mm-hmm.
What am I saying there?
The Jim was a very important part of the promotion for the friend that I forgot his name already.
Well, yeah, he didn't have one.
Oh, so friend.
Yeah.
So Jim, the friend... got in someplace because of Jim.
Because of Jim.
Because of Jim.
Yeah. So there's not a devil of a lot of mystery to this one, but way that it is correlated to politics is one that I did not I wasn't aware of. I didn't think of it like that. I just think of you rode someone's coattails. That, yeah, that meant you really weren't worthy of whatever
mm-hmm.
position you were holding or whatever, but someone else you were connected to, affiliated with, friends with, was.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And so images of, say, someone with long coattails walking and then with like three or four other people just sort of skiing on the back of that coattail as mm-hmm. it drags on the floor there like a wedding train.
Yes.
That sort of imagery is what we see, and it dates back to Abraham Lincoln.
Hmm.
So there's a speech Abraham Lincoln gave in 1848 discussing Zachary Taylor, who was a general,
mm-hmm.
And discussing him in terms of having coattails. And so in the speech there, he showed there was hypocrisy in their critiques of Whigs hiding under presidential nominee Taylor's military coattail. So this was our first documented print of it,
mm-hmm.
is from that, 1848. Yeah. So that was embraced by political parties and parties battling each other and candidates, et cetera, mm-hmm. would use that as in a derogatory terms.
Yeah, like, okay.
Yeah. And then it just sort of naturally morphed into regular use.
Everyday people's.
Yeah, you're in the company or in school or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of etymology, phraseology, any virologies, really. I mean, there's nothing.
No-ologies.
It's just, this is what it was. So, hiding under coattails had been documented before that to say, you know, you got in there sort of like a Trojan horse, sort of,
yeah.
But the riding the coattails, mid 19th century, and boom, that's all that one is.
Huh.
I know.
Yeah.
But sometimes they're simple like that.
Well, that's a great way to button this episode up. See, I shoehorned it in. I'll shoehorn stuff in. Yeah, that's a good one too. Shoehorn.
Yeah, keeps coming up.
That's a free one.
Yeah, please make a note of that too.
Yeah, shoehorn free.
All right, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks and, for listening and subscribing and rating and
all
everything.
That stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and send us thoughts, comments, suggestions, and relative criticisms. And in order to do that, you could send those to heyyou at whole9yards.org. That's heyyou at whole9yards.org. And you know, let us know what we can do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm Jay.
I'm Ray.
And we're not idioms.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at whole9yards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyyou@whole9yards.org. That's heyyou@whole9yards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.